I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. How we doing? Welcome to the shop. What's new?
Hey, man.
Oh, my God, man. Well, check this out. Gun owners have been bearing arms at town hall meetings on health care in both New Hampshire and Arizona. And, shock. Oh, it's got people talking, right? You know, and it came after that one guy, William Kostick. He wore his sidearm in plain view at one of President Obama's town hall meetings in New Hampshire. And A-Train, you're the JD in the house. You're the lawyer, right? And what's interesting to me is that 48 states have some kind of license to carry concealed weapons laws, and some of these states even have open carry laws.
Right.
Break some of that down for us, bro.
Well, in shorthand terminology, the concept of open carry is understood to be openly carrying a firearm in public. And the United States is essentially broken down into four categories of open carry states. So we have permissive open carry states, licensed open carry states, anomalous open carry states, and non-permissive open carry states. Now, in very simple terms, a permissive open carry state, you can openly carry your firearm freely, like Arizona, where one of these cases happened with the AR-15 rifle, which is a civilian version of the M16. Then you have licensed ones where some states allow you to open carry, but just you need a license. Some are anomalous where the state legislature right now and the current state law are currently at odds, and so it's kind of hazy in terms of that. And then there are the non-permissive states, which say that you may not openly carry a firearm. And so, you know, this gets back to the whole gun debate in terms of, you know, you're seeing people carrying AR-15s to public rallies. You know, are you going to see, you know, a guy with a rocket launcher at a Chuck E. Cheese, you know, next Wednesday?
Or, nice.
You know, with an Uzi at an IKEA, or, you know, imagine a Glock 9 at a parent-teacher conference.
Wow.
But Ruben, help me out here. Even more than that, you know, of course, you know, it's an intimidation tactic, of course. But more than that, it also feeds into this fear that a lot of people, especially people of color, had early on that Obama, if elected, would not be safe in this country. You know,
forgive me, Jimmy. I just want to add one thing, though, I totally see your point. I want to hear what Ruben has to say, but there was one image that was widely played earlier this week of an African-American man named Chris. Didn't give his last name to reporter with an AR-15 who was outside of President Obama's town hall meeting in Phoenix on Monday. And, I'm not saying he's representative of anybody but himself, but I do think it's fair to hear what he has to say. So if you don't mind, I'd like to play a short clip.
A lot of people think we live in a democracy so that we can vote how the minority is going to live. And if we want health care, as long as we get enough people, we'll just take money from you and we'll buy whatever we want, pay for whatever we want. And I just think that it's in America, people have the ability to fight back and to resist. And that's another reason why I'm here.
The only reason I'm mentioning the race piece is that, you know, you will note that some of the conservative blogs kept saying, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? So, okay, what about this guy? And you hear what he has to say. What this has to do with healthcare, I'm not really sure. And why people feel a need to openly display weapons, I'm interested in what you all have to say about that.
Well, Michelle, you know, CNN reported that a lot of these gun owners were sent to these town hall meetings by supporters of Ron Paul. So I don't even know how many of these gun owners are even legit. You know,
right. Well, if they're registered, they're legit. But
Jimmy,
it's just,
this is Ruben.
Go ahead, Ruben.
A couple things here. I'm glad that the African American guy with the AR-15 had a say, because this is progress. This is about, you know, like the move with feminism. You have the freedom to think, the freedom to choose different sides of a debate. You wouldn't have had this conversation 20, 30 years ago. So that's a good thing.
Of all the racist laws keeping guns out of the hands of black people. So
absolutely.
We'll
point
that out.
Deliberately.
I just
stopped
my grandfather. But go ahead.
He's not a caricature. He's not sort of like this racist white guy who wants to kill Obama.
But that doesn't mean that the former doesn't exist, because the latter also exists.
Yeah, it just means
those two realities can exist in the same world, is my point.
It just means that complexity is important. Nuance is important. Sometimes the media misses the nuance. But beyond that, this whole discussion about carrying guns is a distraction. The reason the president's in incredible difficulty with health care is not because of gun-toting opponents at town hall meetings. It's because he cannot corral his own Democratic Party. Forget the Republicans. Republicans are irrelevant in this debate. They don't have the votes to make a difference one way or another. It's all about trying to herd these cats together, all these Democrats together. That's the real story. The Democratic Party is a mess.
I think that's
a story.
I gotta say one thing, though, because I'm sure I want to hear what Pablo have to say about this. But let me just say this about that. A lot of times when you raise an issue about the kind of climate of public discourse, people say, well, that's a distraction. Well, the climate of public discourse matters to me. It matters to me because I feel that when you create a hostile environment, you're saying the loudest voice wins.
Right.
Now, I understand that these men, because they seem to mainly be men, are acting out a constitutional right and they are acting within the confines of the law, and that's fine. But what bothers me is the lack of courtesy involved. And I guess I totally understand your point about the substance of it, Ruben, but I also don't understand why issues like courtesy and civility are not important.
Right.
And
you know who's really discourteous in this debate is labor unions. Let me just quickly, one who's really discourteous in this debate, labor unions have put out a threat basically against Democrats. The AFL-CIO has put out a threat against Democrats to say that if you guys waver on a public option to please the blue dog Democrats, labor unions have threatened the Democrats saying we're going to work against
you. That's
a
different thing. Excuse me. That is what politics is. Politics is what we have in place of war. Okay.
Well, so courteous is not just taking guns to meetings.
No, okay. But see, this is what I feel trivializes the point. What we have is the ballot box in place of the gun. That is what civilization is supposed to be about. So for you to say that people who say I'm going to use my franchise, my vote, and my ability to organize, and that is on par with people displaying weapons in public, I'm sorry.
It's
not a threat. It's called politics as opposed to, okay, all right. If you think that those are equivalent, then I think we should just agree to disagree and move on.
Here's what I think. I don't think that you can expect to have a civil conversation with anybody, a real debate with anybody that's got a gun. Pablo, break it down.
Right, and this is really one of those classic, you know, friction lines between common sense and civil liberties. But ultimately, I think you do need to allow these people to carry those guns. I mean, as much as I'd love to see them as a personal preference not be there, the bottom line is we sort of deem as a society, obviously, to err on the side of civil liberties because we feel the slope is slipperier if we start to curtail them in favor of common sense. And that's the whole deal with free speech. That's the whole deal with this. But it really is one of those things where we just need to accept that it's happening and hope for the best almost and hope that the Secret Service teams out there know what they're doing. And they've said they do. Obviously, they're posturing to some degree. But hopefully, you just sort of trust that they're ready to jump in.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Pablo Torre in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, Brett Favre's back again, this time passing the ball for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, you know what, Pablo, I'm looking at this guy, and I don't know what it is about the ego of older men. Hold on, hear me out. I'm looking 40 right in the eye, and I'm telling you, my back is cracking, my neck, my back. You know, I'm having all kinds of problems. And Brett Favre, homeboy, is running on, as I've said before, he's only running on ego and Gatorade. Pablo, what is it about sports figures in general, and Favre particularly, that make them stay in the game past their prime?
Well, it really is something that's, you know, I'm not going to say unique or exclusive to sports, but certainly heightened and amplified. You have a guy who does not want to let his past go. It's a matter of somebody who was the best player in the NFL, somebody who did have a street named after him in Green Bay, who had a restaurant named after him, was a local and almost national hero for so long. Personally, if I'm Brett Favre, I don't know if I want to let go either.
Well, let's hear from the horse's mouth. Michelle, we got tape, right?
We do. All right. This is Brett Favre from his press conference on Tuesday. Here it is.
You can't take away the 16 years I had in Green Bay. It was unbelievable. It was great. And that will be forever cherished by me and the guys I played with. And, you know, they've moved on. I've moved on. I think it's great for football. I can't see how you wouldn't think it would be.
What's so terrible?
Leave him alone.
That's what I'm saying.
How many painkillers? I mean, he doesn't sound like he's on painkillers to you. I mean,
this is his prerogative. I mean, the funny thing is, it's like working for a corporation where the corporation has no loyalty to you. They lay you off, but you're supposed to have loyalty to them. Is he supposed to have loyalty to the Green Bay Packers? They threw him out. You know, they put him out to pasture.
Right.
A lot of other people made a different choice. They would have gone a different way and said, you know, they're going to back away from the game. But I don't see that this is anybody's decision but his own.
I don't understand. I guess I don't understand this kind of idea that you shouldn't play because you'll taint
our
memory.
Michelle, you shouldn't be seen in public once you're not an ingenue.
You should just stay home.
Don't hate the player.
Excuse me.
I really think there's some dignity and going out on top and just letting your legacy marinate.
You know what? But to your point.
To your point, Michelle,
I mean, if when you get long in the tooth and write your 10th book.
Longer, right?
Right, longer in the tooth and write your 10th book, the test of whether you still have it is whether we buy the book. If the book is good, fine. Why should we say, oh, once you get your Pulitzer, you should just stop writing? Well, who said?
Well, I think it's, and this is Pablo, I think it's also because, I mean, I'm not sure if that's the truest test because fans will pay to watch a train wreck. I think fans feel... I mean, fans, for better and for worse, feel like they're stakeholders not just in the teams they kind of pay tickets to, but in the images of their favorite players. And it's a very selfish thing, and it's ultimately a horribly irrational thing, but they want to preserve their athletes and their heroes the way they want them to be, the way they remember them.
Why not?
Don't hate the player. Don't hate the player.
Okay, well, speaking of hating the player, Michael Vick.
Ouch!
Good segue.
Has finally found a job. No, not at Walmart. He's playing football for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, you know, he finally broke his silence this past weekend on 60 Minutes. And Michelle, we got some tape, right?
Yes, we do. And of course, I have to give my disclosure. I will not be discussing this because my husband was one of Michael Vick's attorneys. So, yes, this is a clip from an interview that he did on 60 Minutes. Here it is.
What's wrong, man? I don't know how many times I got to say it. I mean, it was wrong. I feel, you know, I feel tremendous hurt behind what happened. And, you know, I should have took the initiative to stop it all, you know, and I didn't. And I feel so bad about that now. And I know, you know, that I didn't step up. I wasn't the leader.
Oh, that's great revelation that he had, you know, while laying on his back in the joint. Thanks for that, Michelle. You know, respect to Billy Martin. What's up, dude? It's like this here. I'm just going to break it down. I wrote this on TheRoot.com that, you know, I had a real problem with Vic getting up there with, you know, the co-signer, Tony Dungy. You know, nice guy. First black coach to win a Super Bowl, right? But it's like if you're really sorry about something, you stand on your own 2 feet and you take that heat. You know, you don't need a Bible thumping co-signer by your side to make you look that much better. But you know what's really interesting is that Dick's Sporting Goods, you know that sporting goods chain, they will not be selling any Vic jerseys until they quote unquote evaluate the reaction of the fans. So
come
Pablo.
On, man, right.
Pablo,
come on, man.
Help me out, Pablo. Help me out.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly a PR move. People, I think ultimately people are going to buy Vic jerseys, whether it's ironically or whether it's because they're genuine Philadelphia Eagles fans. So Dick's there is trying to get out on moral high ground and sort of say we're distancing ourselves from Michael Vick. But as far as people buying them, I mean, people are going to buy them for the simple reason that fans also don't care about, you know, steroids and all these other things that happen off the field. I mean, fans, sports in this country are so strong, and the allegiances are so strong that you'd need to do something really, really, really bad in order to get banished from someone's closet.
That is true. I mean, because brothers rock the OJ.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they rock the OJs.
You can go down the list of criminals and alleged criminals who have done certain things, whether it's drunk driving and vehicular manslaughter to OJ Simpson and so forth. You need to do something really bad and oftentimes, you know, that bad thing is something
strangling,
that happens on the
fluffy,
field. It's throwing an interception as opposed to killing somebody with your car.
Adrian.
Listen, man, I got to give Dick's Sporting Goods both the Redunculus and the Come On Man Award of the week. I mean, seriously.
I haven't heard the Come On Man Award.
I've done it a few times. Seriously, like, he got signed by a professional football team. He's number 7 on the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, granted, for months I had predicted that he would probably end up in the black and silver of an Oakland Raiders jersey, which I think would have had more street value. But
in every possible sense.
You know,
that's right. Is it true that the slogan of my beloved Oakland Raiders is, hey, man, it's only a misdemeanor. I'll tell you what. I mean, the reason the sporting goods store I know my boys, I got nothing but love for the Oakland Raiders. I'll tell you what. The reason the sporting goods store is thinking that way is because people feel differently about crimes against dogs. I mean, I don't understand this, but if you look at the outrage when the Vic story first broke, this is not just going to go away. There are a lot of folks out there who think that it's one thing to go off and shoot up a nightclub or something, and or even, you know, the steroid, you're hurting yourself. But to go out there and inflict pain on these animals,
and then come back
later on 60 Minutes in this kind of farcical interview and say, I was wrong, it was wrong. I mean, most people understand that's just PR packaging. I want to go play football again. So Mark my words, this is not going away for him.
But Ruben,
hold on, Ruben. I have to tell you what it is about the nature of the offense. This is real talk. There are some crimes against women, children, and animals that are crimes of the soul, mm-hmm. my friend.
Right on.
Crimes
right
of
on.
The soul.
Right.
You know what
That's
I mean?
True.
And,
That's true.
You know, if you're a believer, you know, God gave you dominion over animals, and this is what you choose to do,
Jimmy.
Seriously, no, bro. Sorry,
Jimmy. And that's
go ahead, A-Train.
That's a very good point that you make. And my only question is, why is it okay for Sarah Palin to be sitting with moose carcasses?
Oh, Sarah Palin.
Seriously. And
I would have paid
the connection.
Why is that seen as sort of like a trophied prize picture of her shooting down moose, but with Michael Vick and dogs, a man who's served 23 months. Sorry. My bad.
Really?
It must have been like years.
It just felt so long.
Yeah, 23 right. months in prison and actually served some time. You know, there is still a double standard. You know, I think with Marley.
As long as you can still eat moose and not eat dog,
legal.
You're good.
One is legal and one
is
not.
Yeah, one is legal. So.
Right, no, I understand it. But I'm saying this from like, you know, we do live in a very dog-centric society today.
Like I said, man, there are crimes against man. There are crimes of the soul, B. It's just like that. But gentlemen, you know what? I think that's a wrap. I'm going to have to go long and throw the ball to Lady of the House, Michelle Martin.
Why am I under the suspicion you keep bringing this topic up just because you know I can't talk about it?
That's a
Jimmy,
fair point.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist, and he's frequently featured on CNN.com, and he joined us from member station KOGO in San Diego. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from our studios in New York. And Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, and he joined us here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brechton Booker, Monica Ipstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, and Jennifer Longmire. Our planning editor is Luis Clemens. He had help this week from Lori Grant. Our line editor is Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand this week from Neil Tivolt and Stacey Abbott. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.